Okay, today is November 23rd, 2011. This is a second interview, or the second interview, with Jill Hopke. We're here in my office inside the University Archives, which is inside Steinbach Library, and this interview is being done for the Capitol Protest 2011 Oral History Project, and I'm Troy Reeves. Jill, thanks for coming.
No problem.
To check the sound here, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Jill Hopke, and my last name is spelled H-O-P-K-E.
Thank you. Okay, so when we left off, we had basically got ourselves to the to February 2011. You had talked about how you and another TAA member had revivified the publicity committee, and the TAA was marching towards their February 14th event. So I'm wondering, I'm going to ask to start off with, if you have specific memories about hearing about the budget repair bill.
Yes, I actually remember it quite well when I first heard about the bill. Last spring semester, I had a Thursday evening class. It's an English class with a professor, John McKenzie. So it's over at College Library in their media lab. And so a friend of mine named Chris is in the class, and he's also a little bit involved with the TAA. I think he had been at our first publicity meeting. He's a grad student in the Comm Arts department here. And so we got done with class. You know, I think our class ended at 8 p.m. You know, so, you know, late in the evening, you know, we got done with class, and he called my attention. He said, oh, come over here, take a look at this. And he had Madison.com, the local newspaper website, open, and he pointed out an article. You know, the news had been leaked that Thursday evening that the next morning Governor Walker was going to be announcing the budget repair bill, and he said, look at this, this would essentially get, you know, we read the article together, and we started talking about how this would essentially get rid of all of our collective bargaining rights and do away with unions. And, you know, the professor came over because we had stayed after class and said, what's going on? You know, so we pointed it out to him too. And so I remember that moment quite well, you know, hearing about it and thinking, oh my God, this is going to be big. You know, it had come out of nowhere. I had watched the governor's State of the State address about a week and a half or so before this, and he had been singling out state workers, but no mention of essentially trying to kill unions in the state for public sector workers. And so I think right away then it kind of hit me that it was going to be big. And so, you know, I think when I got home, I maybe sent some emails, or there were those of us that had been at that first meeting of the TAA publicity. We weren't officially constituted as the committee at that point, but we had one meeting the previous week. So, you know, I emailed with some people, you know, oh, should we meet tomorrow? I mean, there was this sense that, I felt a sense that we needed to do something right away and respond to it right away, or kick into action. Particularly because we had this event planned for Monday, and, you know, we had been expecting around probably 100 people. We put out a press release, and we probably said hundreds of students. You know, you never know how many people are going to come to a demonstration, like an average university demonstration, where you kind of march from one end of State Street to the other end of State Street. You know, so the plan was to meet at the Union and march up State Street and deliver these Valentines to the governor. And so right away, you know, that demonstration began to take on a different tone. You know, it took on a lot more significance that it was happening the Monday after this bill was announced. And so another person from the TAA publicity committee and I decided that we would meet like 4 p.m. on Friday, after we both got done with our teaching and campus obligations. She's also a grad student in the Comm Arts department. And so that Friday, we met at the TAA office, and it was a buzz with, I want to say dozens, but anyway, a lot of activity, a lot of people gathered, and I think it felt urgent. You know, there was a sense of urgency to take action. You know, the reports that we were getting over that weekend were that the Republicans wanted to force a vote on this bill the next week, you know, and that they were trying to push this bill through. When I say they, I mean the Republicans in the legislature were trying to push this bill through over the course of less than a week. And this would be, you know, rolling back 50 years of collective bargaining rights for public sector workers in Wisconsin in less than a week. You know, it took on a lot of significance, one, because of the content of what Governor Walker was trying to do, but also, two, because of the time frame and how quickly the Republicans were moving to try to push this through. So, which I think helped us. I think it helped us to galvanize opposition, you know, that there was a sense of urgency and that it was so quick and that it was so unexpected actually played in our favor. Because you think, you know, I think about all of the emails I get, whether they're from the TAA, whether they're from the union, or from some other activist source. And, you know, a lot of times everything seems urgent, right? Or, you know, they're trying to get you to do something all of the time. And there's, it's only so often when you have a critical spark, a moment. And so I think the urgency of it and this sense, and also Governor Walker made statements that Friday, which got in the mainstream news and I think even a little bit of a national attention over the weekend, that he had said, he made a comment reference that he would call out the National Guard, I think specifically in regard to if prison workers decide, you know, walked off the job. But that even pushed it even further, that he announced the bill right away and was already making these kind of confrontational, escalating, you know, fear-mongering type comments. And so I think that helped us. But anyway, you had just asked me to explain a little bit of the context, so I'll stop there for now.
No, that's great. So actually what I'm hoping to do with this is to sort of go a little bit of stream of consciousness and just your memories as the protests progress, and then I'll jump in with specific questions and if you want to specifically address your role with the media part of it, you can do that. If not, I'll be following up about that anyway. Mm-hmm. So let's move to, unless there was something that weekend between the announcement and the 14th, unless there's something in that weekend that stands out in your mind, you feel like you need to speak to, why don't we next talk about the February 14th event?
Well, let me say a couple more things.
Sure.
About that weekend.
Sure.
And about the TAA. What really struck me, and I alluded to it already, is just, again, the sense of urgency and bringing out a lot of people that otherwise hadn't been active in the union, both of the co-presidents were actually out of town that first weekend, or coming back into town that first weekend. And so, you know, I don't want to say there was a void in leadership, because there certainly wasn't, but it was a situation that was this heightened critical moment. And so I had this feeling that everybody was doing what they could. And, you know, this continued throughout the entire occupation, and, you know, there were tensions between formalized organizational structure and decision-making processes and the need to make decisions quickly and react, you know, tactically to something, you know, to events as they are evolving very quickly. And this is a tension within the organization that I think we saw throughout what became the Capitol occupation is, you know, kind of pushing the limits of what, you know, an organization like the TAA is certainly not designed with the idea of occupying the state capitol in mind and being the center of national spotlight. It's designed to negotiate contracts, to be, you know, a democratic decision, you know, have democratic decision-making processes and follow Robert's rules of order and meetings that take a very long time to sometimes make decisions about things that are relatively small in scale. And so there were a lot of tensions, I think, that arose around organizational structure. But on the whole, I think that the organization really rose to the occasion of confronting this attack on workers' rights. And so that weekend, you know, both Friday, I was there late into the night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, maybe 12 to 16 hours. And there were many people in a similar situation as me. We started phone banking members right away. That's not something that I was personally doing the media stuff, but other TAA members and volunteers started phone banking our membership. We did our first canvas. We participated in a larger, it might have been either AFT or actually I think it was AFL-CIO organized canvassing. So I drove with some friends out to Dale Schultz's district that Sunday, you know, a couple days after the bill was announced, and we spent the afternoon knocking on union members' doors. We were going specifically to union households because the tactic at that point was to try to get, and Peter Rickman kept saying five, and I don't know, I get five Republicans to vote no. Like, the idea is, like, you needed three votes to vote, to swing, you know, to for the bill to fail, but they needed to vote as a group. So the tactic at that point was to work within the legislative process and convince more moderate Republican senators, Dale Schultz being one of them and being the only Republican senator that did actually vote no on the bill in the end, to vote no. And so what we were doing is, when we did that canvas, is we were going to union members' households in Dale Schultz's district, and, you know, and I was really struck by people who had heard about the bill, that, you know, many of the people we talked to said, I already called him, I'll call again, I tried calling and I couldn't get through. So I think that there was this overall sense of mobilization or people taking action, you know. So it wasn't just the TAA, but the TAA had one, I think, critical piece, you know, but we're a relatively small state worker union, but a critical piece in this larger picture of trying to pressure the Republicans, you know, on this issue. So I guess I'll stop there with that weekend. But it kind of set this tone of, again, urgency, like I said, and kind of coming together and everybody contributing what they could to this effort. We found out sometime Sunday that there was going to be a public hearing on Tuesday the 15th, and there was going to be one public hearing, and it was going to be on Tuesday the 15th. And we got that information at some point in Sunday. So there was this constant shifting of, you know, new information that would be coming out, and tactics and things were changing relatively quickly. You know, so we started not only, you know, finalizing our plans for the demonstration on the 14th, but looking ahead to planning for what we were going to do for the day of the public hearing on the 15th. And as far as media stuff, over the weekend, we put together talking points, more social media, and following up. Obviously, our event took on a lot more significance and was getting more media attention than it otherwise would have. And we trained spokespeople. We found, you know, our members and then a couple, at least one undergraduate student that was from, people that were from Wisconsin and, you know, kind of have that Wisconsin families high that could be spokespeople, and we had meetings with them to kind of talk about talking points and think strategically about how we wanted to present the issue and how we wanted to present ourselves as graduate student work and as workers. And the university, because there was a dual message of, one, the message was about collective bargaining rights, and the message, you know, the original message was more about education funding. So kind of trying to merge those two and make a connection between what are our working conditions as graduate students and faculty and academic staff, what are our working conditions, our learning conditions for students, and making those broader links. And I do want to mention that we worked with undergraduate students from the Student Labor Action Coalition, and also, you know, some key individuals from the Associated Students of Madison. And that was one of the things that surprised me and helped me really realize the significance of all of this, is that it was bringing in not what you would consider to be core labor constituencies, that it wasn't just those of us that are directly affected that were active and speaking out, but it was also our allies amongst graduate students. And I can come back to that later, because they really did also some innovative things with social media and organizing.
Okay, great. I do want to ask one specific question, because we never know who's going to read this and how far in the future and what political strategies and tactics will be. Mm-hmm. So would you mind defining phone banking, and then specifically what type of phone banking you were doing that weekend? I think you said it wasn't necessarily you, but just sort of the TAA in general.
Right. Yeah, I didn't actually do phone banking myself. But, you know, so what it is, you know, well, we have our own member TAA membership roles. There's approximately 3,000 project assistants and teaching assistants on campus. Of that, approximately half at that point were members. And so we have various amounts of contact information for those individuals, right? You know, the university provides just basic information on somebody's name, their unit, the type of position they have, and like their office address and email. But then when they join, we also usually get a phone number, potentially a non-university email and an address. So we have a list, you know, a membership list. And so phone banking is essentially just going through and calling all of your members. So they would get a membership email, but, you know, we know people don't always open emails or might skim over them or not read them. So when something is deemed urgent and of such scale significance that you want to get people to come to the rally Monday, you want to get people to come to the public hearing on Tuesday, you know, what we and inform them about what was going on, obviously, because it was new and maybe not everybody was paying attention to the news. Just calling through the member lists and having conversations with members, or at minimum, you know, leaving voicemails and telling people, you know, what was going on. And so, you know, we definitely called all of our own members, and I believe, you know, we might have also been phone banking other unions. The TAA office became a phone banking center as the occupation developed, and through the Supreme Court election, I don't think we offered it as a phone banking site during the summer recalls, since we didn't have so many of our members around, but it became a site. You know, there was the Capitol occupation that was going on, and then there was parallel, you know, there was a TAA office as a site for phone banking. So we weren't, you know, beginning, we were mostly, I think, phone banking our own members, but as things progressed, we were also serving as a site to phone bank more generally.
All right. Thank you. So I think that leads us to Valentine's Day, and what was going to be one type of rally turned into something a little different. Mm-hmm. So if you mind talking about your memories of that day specifically, and then if you want to sort of move on how that built, or we can ask follow-ups about that depending on how it goes.
Sure. So I gave you a little bit of background about how we prepared for the media strategy. You know, the meeting point was in front of Memorial Union, and we had one of our members got red balloons, helium balloons, and we gave those to the spokespeople. You know, the idea was, you know, when reporters came, we could say, oh, talk to that person or talk to somebody that has a red balloon. You know, the system didn't work quite as well as we might have hoped, because I couldn't necessarily find everyone, you know, and a lot of times I found that if you have a clipboard, you look official and reporters want to talk to you. So I had a clipboard. So I ended up getting interviewed by a reporter from Wisconsin Public Radio and also one television station. I think just because I had a clipboard and I looked official, it was like I was organizing something. So the clipboard as a universal signifier of being an organizer, apparently. But overall, I think the system worked all right. But, you know, so there's that, you know, as an activist, you want reporters to talk to people that you've kind of trained and that you've given the official line and the talking points, and this is why we're doing this, and we've thought about messaging. But, you know, I've also been a reporter. You know, if you're a reporter, you kind of just want to talk to anyone, right? You know, you want to just find somebody who's just there, and you don't necessarily want the scripted official line. So there's always that tension between trying to have people in your organization and the undergraduate staff, faculty, community members that showed up to be presenting the message that we wanted to get across, and then just the nature of that kind of ever-shifting media landscape, or, you know, as an event is unfolding, you know, reporters will just talk to anyone. So, you know, I remember it being a really sunny day. You know, we actually had very nice weather in mid-February for Wisconsin, and I think that's something completely out of our control that really helped, is that I remember it being a bright, sunny day, and there was a pretty large crowd of us. I don't really feel like I had the sense that it was big until we started marching up State Street, and it took up a few blocks, and as we got to the Capitol, and so we were handing out, there had also been sign making over the weekend at the TAA office, so people were handing out signs, and some folks, some other grad students from my department came. I had sent out an email to all of the graduate employees in my department on Sunday, you know, giving some background and saying, I'm going to go to this demonstration Monday. If you want to come with me, we can meet at 11:30. I think it was supposed to start at noon, so we can meet at 11:30 at our office, and we can walk together. So then there was four of us that went together. And that was kind of nice to get people in my department to come. You know, there was a lot of interest. And so I tried to continue that throughout the spring. It's just giving people information and sending out periodic emails. Because even for people that weren't actively involved, there was a lack of information and things were changing quickly. And so I think it was important to keep people informed about what was happening. And as things shifted quickly. So we had started with this message of I heart UW, Governor Walker, don't break my heart. And so one thing that was cool that the undergraduate students did from the Student Labor Action Coalition, or the acronym is SLAC, is started this kind of hands off our teachers. And so, you know, on Twitter, you know, we had the hashtag hands off our teachers. It's a little bit long for a hashtag, but hands off our teachers. And again, I talked about that coalition between the undergraduate students and us as teaching assistants as being real important. And so it was nice to have their energy and their enthusiasm too, and making those links. And we also actually over the weekend had set up this website, Defend Wisconsin, defendwisconsin.org, and a parallel Twitter account, which became very important during the Capitol occupation, Defend Wisconsin. And so we set that up on Saturday or Sunday at some point. And so we kicked it off Sunday. And so, you know, the first day we had, I think we had one of the undergraduate students was tweeting, like, we're going to march up State Street now. You know, and if you want to find out what's happening, follow this Twitter account. Because we started off with no followers, right? And now I think we're up to about 6,500 followers on Twitter. And so we kicked things off that way. You know, I remember marching up State Street. I remember there being a really good energy to it. Things were pretty depressing over the weekend, but going canvassing on Sunday and getting a pretty much unanimous positive response, and people had heard about the bill, they had called Dale Schultz, and then combining that with Monday, there was a good energy, and you know, having undergraduate and graduate students and other community members there. And I remember going into the Capitol, and as we were going into the rotunda area, and it's very echoey. It was, you know, obviously I got used to it later, but it was that first moment when we were going in there and we were walking as a group and we were chanting, kill the bill, kill the bill, kill the... So the initial hashtag that we were using was kill this bill and kill the bill. So we were starting off with those hashtags on Twitter. So that was the main chant, was kill the bill, kill the bill, kill the bill. And, you know, we were streaming into the rotunda and chanting, and you know, it filled up the entire Capitol, and we had all of the signs with hearts and balloons, and there was a very positive energy about it, even though it was a very serious issue. From a framing perspective, I think it was really good, you know, and it was Valentine's Day to use this messaging and imagery of hearts and love and kind of a very soft, positive tone to a demonstration. So we delivered the Valentines and piled them up on a desk. They knew, the governor's office, I think, knew we were coming. So there was a desk set up in front of his office, and it was blocked off by some security. So we weren't able to go into the office to deliver them, but piled them on this desk in front of his office. And then we stayed there for a little bit. And then we basically marched back outside, and we're outside the Capitol for a little bit, and then just telling everybody, come back tomorrow for this public hearing. So that was the tone of the first day, you know. And then after that, we had a general member. The TAA is run on a structure where there are general membership meetings, or called GMMs, and those are meetings. You know, any meeting is open to all members, but those are meetings for the membership. And so there was a GMM that evening in the Humanities Building on campus. And I want to say at least there was probably at least 100, maybe 150 people that came to that meeting. So, you know, went back to the TA office and was preparing for that meeting, and different constituencies within the union were going to present. So I think that I stood up and said a few things about media. And so graduate assistants, whether they were members or not, you know, were wondering what was happening. And so, and people were signing up. I remember a lot of times during the Capitol occupation, there were a lot of people that were signing up for the first time that hadn't been members previously. So there'd be a couple people that would be in their blue cards. Like, becoming a member is you fill out a card, you sign a membership card, and ours were blue. So piles of those around where people were signing up. So there was a membership meeting that evening, mostly informational, and again, trying to mobilize people to come Tuesday on the 15th of February to the public hearing that next morning and testify, and try to kind of pack the hearing and get lots of people testifying, and pack the Capitol, and again, get more people to turn out the next day. And then I was in on I participated in a meeting that was after that, that was more of a tactical meeting, and that was at one of the coffee shops on State Street that I don't go to that often. I forget the name of the one that was at. But we had a meeting at a coffee shop on State Street to talk strategy, because there were different kinds of parallel types of organizing going on. You know, I was doing media stuff, and we were going to be continuing that the next day at the public hearing. And then there were a couple other people that were doing, again, running phone banking out of the TA office and continuing to do canvassing. And then there was the piece of, like, keeping members informed, and then figuring out, you know, who was going to get there first thing in the morning when the hearing opened, who was going to be in charge of kind of getting TAA members to the right place to testify. And, you know, it's hard to get on the wireless internet connection at the Capitol. So who would get there earliest, who could get internet connections. And so talking about that kind of strategy. And that, so that was the evening of the 14th. And then leading into the public hearing on the 15th.
Okay. So you've been working at this point long days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Do you recall at this point, are you on adrenaline? How do you physically feel after these 4 days of go, 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 go?
Well, I guess I would say exhausted. I made it until about the middle of the second week of the demonstrations before I got sick. I did end up getting sick about 2 weeks into it, because there's only so long that you can go on adrenaline alone. Because it certainly only got worse after that point. You know, that was just going into essentially the second day of the demonstrations. I was a teaching assistant last spring, and TAing for a course in my department. It's called LSC 100. It's an introduction to composition and public speaking course. So it meets Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So I would teach. Last semester I was teaching Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9:30 to 10:45, and so. So I didn't have to teach on that Tuesday. Did I have class that day? I don't know why I don't remember. I shouldn't have just said I didn't remember, but I didn't have class. But anyway, so I went, you know, early in the morning, maybe around 9 a.m., but mm-hmm. there were some people that had agreed to get there at 7 a.m. So I went early in the morning, and we were trying to watch the hearing, also communicating what was happening about the hearing via Defend Wisconsin. So Defend Wisconsin, both on Twitter, and we later set up a Facebook group page for Defend Wisconsin, but we also had the TAA's account on Twitter and Facebook, which we didn't have a lot of followers at that point. Right now, the TAA Facebook page has approximately a little over 2,000 likes, and then the TAA on Twitter has around a little over 1,000 followers. Defend Wisconsin has more, you know, it's kind of as a brand a little bit more all-encompassing than the TAA. Mm-hmm. You know, so putting out information about what was happening, what was going on in the hearing through those channels. The Defend Wisconsin website itself was pretty rudimentary at that point. And I went into all of this not having a background in web design and learned a lot of web updating, how to use WordPress, which is a pretty user-friendly program, but they're both the TAA website and Defend Wisconsin website are both WordPress sites. So it functions a lot like a Word document, but there's definitely a learning curve for me personally about how to use those technologies. You know, I had been on Twitter before, but never used it a whole lot. And so I learned a lot of that very quickly as well. So things shifted very quickly on Tuesday the 15th. Do you want me to talk more about that day?
Yeah, let's talk about that day.
Okay. Well, we certainly didn't set out to occupy the Capitol. I think that there had been maybe murmurings of that idea the day before, but I personally was a skeptic. I dismissed that idea and was continually surprised throughout what became the occupation of the State House. So the idea that day, or the tactic that day, was to pack the public hearing. You know, we're going to pack the public hearing. And that was what our stated goal was, to pack the public hearing, to get it to go as long as possible, and show that there was this outpouring of opposition and concern about this bill. So unions from around the state were busing their members into the state capitol to testify. So you had a lot of teachers, nurses. So the testimony went on all day. I ended up testifying at about probably 2:30 in the morning on the 16th, what was then the 16th. I don't think that the legislators, probably the Democrats or the Republicans, anticipated what a huge response there would be. The testimony went from, well, the hearing probably started at 8 a.m., and then the official hearing, the Republicans cut off testimony at the official hearing at like 3 a.m. on the 16th, so that entire day. And then there was a point, which I guess I'll talk about, the evening of the 15th, I remember being up on the fourth, the hearing was going on the fourth floor of the Capitol in one of their hearing rooms, and we were getting word at about, in the evening, around, I want to say around 9 p.m., that the Republicans were going to cut off testimony, that they were going to cut off testimony to that evening, and so we had to respond very quickly. Again, this is that kind of triage and dealing as things come up. And the Capitol had emptied out a lot. There had been, I want to say maybe there were like, estimates might have been around 15,000 people there during the day, but it had significantly thinned, obviously, by evening. But there were a lot of TAA people left, some undergraduate students, and others that were continuing to testify, you know, particularly if you would have come in from out of town, you know, you'd be waiting all day to testify. And they had probably hundreds of people left that had turned in slips. And, you know, you fill out a registration slip, and then you turn it in, and you can either register your opposition, or you can register, or support, or you can either register to speak, or register just for or against. And by and large, everyone was registering in opposition and to speak in opposition. But whether or not those people were still there, you know, if you registered in the morning and it's 9 p.m. at night, and if people are still going to physically be there to speak. But there were a lot of people that hadn't spoken and hadn't given testimony. And I hadn't actually at that point either. But a group of mostly TAA members were standing, ended up, you know, went to the front of the door of the public hearing room and were chanting, "Let us speak, let us speak, let us speak." And this is probably one of the things that stays with me the most, is just hearing people chanting, "Let us speak, let us speak, let us speak." It was a tense moment. And what I was doing with a couple other TAA members is we were sitting in the hallway around the corner with one laptop that we were, you know, had on the guest wireless network at the Capitol, looking up phone numbers for television stations and calling reporters. And I remember calling the student papers. And right now, I don't remember if it was the Badger Herald or if it was the Daily Cardinal. We called both of them. And they were so excited. The student reporters are like, really? That's what's going on? We're coming right now, you know? And I just think, like, oh, as a young, you know, undergraduate journalist, like, it's going to be, like, the most exciting thing that's ever happened in your young journalistic career. So, you know, I think we had given them our cell phone numbers, and they were like, is it still going on? Is it over here? We're coming right now. You know, they were, like, rushing up State Street to get to the Capitol. And, yeah, that was pretty cute. Like, that was exciting for them, I think. And so we were desperately calling all of the media outlets, because at that point, you know, they had pretty much done their story for the day, right? But it was still before the 10 p.m. news. So it was like, it was a moment where we could tactically try to get on the news at 10, right? And so still try to get it in. So we were focusing on, you know, we made sure that we called the student papers, but we were, you know, focusing also on trying to get television and get television cameras there. There was one reporter who was there the day of the public hearing from the Chronicle of Higher Education. And that reporter, he ended up doing a pretty sympathetic piece in the Chronicle of Higher Ed. So he was there. But at that moment, when people were in that hallway chanting, let us speak, let us speak, let us speak, there were not very many reporters there. We ended up, I think, you know, we got back on the news and we talked to several reporters that, you know, were in the Capitol area. And so that was what I was doing in that moment. So that moment was tense. And then Lena Taylor, who's one of the Democratic senators, came out and she stood on a chair and she spoke, or kind of acted as a mediator between the Republican chairs of the Joint Finance Committee and us, the demonstrators. And what they agreed to do was that they would continue the testimony until 3 a.m., and then the Republicans cut off the testimony, and the Democrats ended up reconvening testimony shortly thereafter, and the testimony continued through the night. And so what we did was there's a clause, I guess, in Department of Administration regulations about the Capitol, that if there's ongoing testimony, the building stays open. And so this was already, you know, 9:30 p.m. Normally, the building hours for the state capitol are 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. But because the public hearing was ongoing, you know, the building was still open. And so this was a decision, I guess, made by whoever was there from the part of the Capitol Police that evening. You know, so there's kind of that interplay between what we as demonstrators were doing and then the response from the officials from Department of Administration and the Capitol Police is, and then so the official hearing ended then at 3 a.m. on the 16th, and the Democrats reconvened an informal public hearing shortly thereafter. And then that was interpreted by Capitol Police, whoever in Department of Administration would have been making decisions at that moment, that would mean the building stayed open, because that would qualify as a public hearing and keeping the building open, which is a key point for what, you know, became the occupation of the Capitol during that couple-week period. Since the building was open, people could come and go. I came back into the Capitol that evening with sleeping bags and pillows and walked past the Capitol Police. I mean, I was convinced that they would stop me, you know, but they didn't. Yeah. Of course, later they started restricting what you bring in the Capitol, but at that point people were carrying and, you know, so we set up a Facebook page, and some of the undergraduates were pushing on Facebook this, like, come sleep with your TAA, come to the Capitol and sleep with your TAA, and we put up Facebook ads like, sleep over in the Capitol, you know, and so a lot of the people that were there, I would say the majority of people that were there that first night, and even the first couple days before it started to get really big, were TAA members and graduate students and undergraduate students, you know, because it was, like, fun, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna take my sleeping bag and my blanket and pillow and I'm gonna go sleep at the Capitol, like, awesome. So it was really that alliances that we were able to build, or pre-existing alliances with undergraduate students in particular, that helped get bodies into the Capitol mm-hmm. and people to continue to testify all night until the next day. And, you know, that hearing ended up going on for at least 60 hours. You know, it continued for over a week, and the Democrats kept hearing testimony. And that was a decision on part, you know, to interpret that as meaning the building stayed open was a key decision on the part of state officials, you know, that allowed the Capitol occupation to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So Tuesday and Wednesday are sort of like one big long day. And maybe even part of Thursday. But are there events that stick out that break that for you?
That's a good question. I remember going and teaching Wednesday morning on very little sleep. You know, I actually slept at home that night because I had to teach the next day. But I remember going home at probably 3:30 in the morning. And at that point, I lived about two blocks from the Capitol, so I lived very close. But I remember being at the Capitol until probably 3 or 3:30 in the morning, and then, you know, I had to teach at 9:30 the next day. So going home and sleeping for probably 3 hours and getting up and teaching on adrenaline alone probably. So I remember, you know, working the next day and then rushing back to the Capitol. There was a room 300 Northeast, and it's a hearing room in the Capitol, and it was originally reserved by the AFT, American Federation of Teachers of Wisconsin, which is the parent union of which the TAA were a local affiliated with the AFT Wisconsin, and so they had reserved this hearing room, and I remember sitting in the room on the Tuesday, on the day of the public hearing. And I was like, oh, we're gonna go have a meeting. You know, somebody, one of the TAA staff people said to me, we're gonna go have a meeting in 300, you know, I think I misheard the room, so it took me a long time to find it. We're gonna go have a meeting about what to do, about tactic, and you should come. And so I went to the room 300 Northeast, and it was a few handful of people from AFT. There was an older woman who was a board member for AFT Wisconsin who was sitting there, myself and a few other TAA members, but essentially the room was empty. And, you know, we basically took the room over. It became our, some people refer to it as a war room, but like strategy room. You know, essentially the TAA ended up taking over this room the first week. And having a space in the Capitol that we were organizing out of was also critical. To tell people to come to that room. We ended up setting up this huge, like, kitchen assemblage right outside. I mean, it was pretty impressive. Somebody brought in a full-size coat rack that was in the hallway. There were Bunsen burners and, like, other kinds of cooking implements and tables of food. And somebody dropped off American flags for us. And so we tried to figure out how to hang them up, and we had little American flags like sitting in our TAA cups because we were getting it became a place where people went. But I remember being there on the 15th in this room that was empty, you know, and within a couple days it just was this hub of activity and central focal point. Reporters were coming by, like AP, BBC, like a big name, like AP, BBC, New York Times, like. I didn't ever talk to anybody from Al Jazeera, but I know that Al Jazeera came, you know, sent reporters and CNN, you know, so I think having that space, that room in the Capitol was very important for us as an organization to coordinate our activities and a central focal point. And also because we had, you know, so then we were also seen as in the leadership or in this position of leadership because we had a space and we had a central coordinating effort inside the Capitol. That second weekend of the demonstrations, we had a membership meeting at the Concourse Hotel, which is a few blocks away from the Capitol. And it was the first time I walked in there and saw that there was this entire parallel organizing effort of all of the bigger unions, like SEIU, AFL-CIO, all of these other unions that was going on in the Concourse Hotel, but I think that we were in a position where we were getting a lot of attention by nature of that we were in the Capitol, that we had this space, coordinating space there. So we were getting a lot of reporters, people, so we used the TAA, Twitter, and Facebook, but more primarily Defend Wisconsin. I feel like it kind of became the voice of the Capitol occupation, and to request supplies and say, you know, we need donations of water and food, and then it would appear, you know, like the morning of the public hearing on the 17th, there was a sit-in in front of the chambers, the Senate chambers. This was before we learned. This was before we learned that the Democrats had fled the state. You know, so that hearing was supposed to start at 11 a.m. and there was a undergraduate student organized walkout that I think that they met at 10 a.m. on Library Mall, and then they marched up to the Capitol. And it wasn't until later that we learned that the Democrats had left the state. So students and others were sitting in front of the Senate chamber. So I remember putting out a tweet, something like, we need water supplies, or, you know, we needed to be able to put food and water to the people that were sitting in, right? And then people started bringing us donations. It was pretty cool, actually. But that was one very important way that we were using social media, was to, one, get out information, but also ask for supplies. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned the Wisconsin 14. Do you have specific memories of when you found out that they had left the Capitol and had fled the state?
Let's see. So that would have been Thursday the 17th. It must have been, I want to say it must have been in the early afternoon on Thursday, because I have a radio show. I had a radio show, I should say, Thursday mornings. What time was our show at? I think, it's bad that I don't remember. I think 11 to noon. And so we did the radio show on WSUM, and we had various students and also a couple faculty members that were participating in the march call in. And we had a woman call in from her car and say, there are high school students, there are students marching up West Washington Avenue, you know, and we got a report from somebody from their car that was listening to our show. So then I rushed back to the Capitol after that. So I want to say that it was early afternoon on the 17th when we got kind of official word, because there was a sit-in going on and the hearing was stalled. And then, because I remember I was sitting at the table. There was a large table or setup of tables in that room that I mentioned, 300 Northeast. So I remember that I was sitting at the table and I was on a computer doing social media. And, you know, I think somebody rushed in to say, you know, the Democrats have left the state. Or, you know, I just remember sitting at the table and, you know, we were doing social media, asking for various supplies, and I must have tweeted something then about how the Democrats had left the state. And I remember being shocked, very shocked. And it was a very weird experience, too, to be sitting in this room on the third floor of the Capitol, a very official, you know, the State House, and being sitting at this table doing media work. And you look behind you and look out the very stately windows, and you see that there's 30,000 people marching around outside. It was a crazy experience to feel like we were in this role of course we weren't coordinating per se. There were all these other influences and other unions, but to be in this role of being in the middle and the hub of organizing and the responsibility that comes with that when you are putting out information to make sure that it's verified, you know. And so I think that's one thing that helped us with Defend Wisconsin to be successful, was that most of us that were running it are communication students. So with Twitter, you have interesting dynamics where it's a great tool to get out information to people quickly, but it can also be a rumor mill and spread misinformation equally as quickly as you can spread factual, true information. But so coming from a communications and journalistic background, I think it helped us, you know, we were always very careful to try to verify information and put out information that we could verify was true. You know, it's hard when things are shifting and happening very quickly, but that helped build a reputation for Defend Wisconsin that otherwise we perhaps might not have had. But to be careful to take that responsibility very seriously when you are seen as in a leadership role in something like a mass protest.
Mm-hmm. Was there an event, whether it was the Wisconsin 14 or something else, that at least signified in your mind that this thing changed between whatever it was initially to a more long-term, multi-week event?
That's a good question. I think the Fab 14, as the Democratic senators have become known as, that in some ways it's kind of all bets of our original strategy were off, in a sense. The original strategy being trying to get some Republicans to vote no. So kind of simultaneous strategy of trying to convince Republicans, a key number of Republicans in the Senate, being 3, to vote no, but also then simultaneously trying to stall so that we could have our voices heard. So that definitely shifted the tactics, and it's kind of this, things are getting kind of crazy, and we're like, imagine what was going to happen, you know, and you have 30,000 people outside marching around, and the Democrats have gone to Illinois, and it's like, oh my God, what if we started? You know, what's going on? just this sense of unknown. And I should mention at that point, the TAA on, I have some notes here, so.
Sure. Like,
you know, the TAA, you know, organized several teach-outs, what we called teach-outs. And we were very strategic to call them teach-outs, not a strike. We don't legally have the right to strike, number one. And number two, you know, we recognize that our target was not the university. We, you know, it's not us versus the university, which was, I think, for some people in the TAA, a little bit of a mentality shift, because the TAA, throughout its history, has always been kind of oppositional with the university administration. You know, we negotiate our contract with the university administration and, you know, other kinds of things that the TAA pushes for, you know, more affordable public education, democracy in higher ed, are things that often pit the TAA against university administration. But in this case, it was very clear that the target was Scott Walker and the Republicans in the legislature at the Capitol, not the university administration. Of course, there's everything that was going on with the New Badger partnership at the same time. So, you know, as the spring went on, that shifted. But in that moment, you know, our target was Scott Walker and was the Republicans. And so we put out a press release, a series of press releases. We put out one on Wednesday, February 16th, with the title, Let's Stop Activity on Campus Tomorrow. You know, reading, the Teaching Assistants Association is strongly calling for a teach out tomorrow. This means we are calling for all activity to cease on campus in response to the threat that the budget repair bill poses to graduate employees, the university community, and workers across the state. We are not calling for the canceling of classes since we value the role of the UW as an institution of learning. Instead, we are calling to hold campus classes off campus. And it goes on. But one of the things that I think myself and others that were doing media for the TAA did was help frame that message in a way that we are very clear, or trying to communicate very clearly, that the target is the state government. It's not the university. And the teach-outs was a very delicate thing because we wanted to take action. This was also somewhat in solidarity with the school teachers, first being Madison Teachers Incorporated, the union that represents teachers in the Madison School District. And then I think up at a certain point, there were up to like a dozen schools around campus. This would have been the 17th. Schools in Madison, Minona Grove, Verona, Oregon, Middleton, Wanakee, DeForest, Oshkosh, and then even Milwaukee. The entire Milwaukee Public School District was closed for at least one day. So we were doing, you know, so every we were taking action kind of not directly coordinated with what the K-12 public school teachers were doing, but mm-hmm. in solidarity with them, but wanting to frame our message very clearly that our target is the state government, that we it's not us versus the university, that we want our members, the teaching assistants, to continue instruction, provide alternative assignments, or to, you know, if possible, meet with their students off of campus, that we don't want learning to stop. But this bill is so urgent, and it's so important that we're asking people to do this, to take action. And so, you know, it was, so negotiating that was at times a little bit difficult. Yeah, the reason I say that is because, you know, we had a series of general membership meetings. So those decisions were made in meetings of the full membership or everybody from the membership that wanted to come. And there were, you know, in those meetings, a couple hundred people maybe. We had several in hearing rooms in the Capitol, in a hearing room that would be packed. So we made those decisions with a large number of people. But part of the tensions between like doing publicity or doing media for an organization like the TAA is making those decisions can take time. And that's important because you need to have buy-in from your members and you want to have a democratic process. But it's hard when you need to communicate that message externally to campus, to the professors that you work for, to, you know, university administration, to the media, and a channel to do that is through the media. And so when meetings were dragging on into the evening, like we're talking on Thursday about whether or not to cancel campus, you know, and it's, you know, 7, 8, 9 p.m. one day, and we're talking about whether or not we want our members to not go to work the next day, that it causes sometimes issues, right, about being able to communicate a coherent message and work within that institutional process, organizational process.
Mm-hmm. A couple more things for this time, and so I want to try to keep it into this early few days.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to ask it this way, now that you've, you know, been able to reflect about this a bit. What sort of things were you learning about, you know, both yourself, organizing, politics with a big P, in these first few days?
I think about myself, I learned that I was capable of staying awake and working more than I would have ever thought possible. And so rising to the occasion myself, but also seeing others around me do the same thing is something that was really gratifying, that organizationally, the TAA, we were able to do what we did because the TAA existed before. But the TAA organization that existed prior couldn't necessarily, you know, wasn't, as I said earlier, wasn't designed with this kind of mass scale protest and occupation in mind. And so being able to work in the moment and navigate and kind of adapt those structures to fit what needed to be done in that moment is something that I'm proud that we were able to do. And there were certainly tensions and around that, but kind of creating structures that worked for then versus, and but also working within the pre-existing structure. So I'll give you an example. So I was one of the people primarily responsible for writing press releases and sending out press releases and, you know, communicating that our messaging externally. And so what we ended up doing, and this was completely developed on the fly, the first week and into the second week of the Capitol occupation, was, you know, we agreed, so it was my friend Magda and I that were primarily, and then a couple other people, but we're primarily writing press releases, is working with the two co-presidents, Kevin Gibbons and Alex Hanna, and, you know, we don't have time to have an entire committee sign off on a press release, but we're going to draft something, and the two of them are going to read it, and we're going to harass them until they do, because media never seems important, but like, you have to do this right now, you know, read this and get quotes from them, and we're going to just get the two of them to sign off on it, and we're going to send it out. You know, like, streamlining processes is something that we were able to do. And for the most part, I think that it was fairly effective, but again, that isn't how the TAA would function in normal times, but an example of how we were able to adapt to the ever-shifting circumstances of the Capitol occupation.
Okay. And one more question I have, and again, this is in these early days, is a couple other people that I've interviewed specifically talked about the weekend being a time of rest because others would come in and sort of pick up the slack. So I don't know if you want to talk about the first weekend, what your memories of that are. Was it a time that you were able to perhaps get some rest, or was it still part of one long continuum for you?
I would say it was more of a long continuum. I mentioned earlier in this interview that I ended up getting physically sick, but that was in end of the second week. So that first weekend, I remember that we had a general membership meeting. I'm just thinking of what day is it? That Sunday. We had a general membership meeting that Sunday evening at the Concourse Hotel, and I alluded to that already. So we had a membership meeting at the Concourse Hotel. So I remember that standing out from that first weekend. It all runs together, you know. So that, you know, there was the day of the public hearing, the day that the Democrats fled the state, you know, and that was the period where we had several teach outs. Like, we had one Thursday, the day of the public hearing, and then I remember going to class teaching on that Friday. So we ended up deciding not to have a teach out Friday. And then we had two more teach outs the following Monday and Tuesday. So I think that's, you know what? I think I actually might be wrong. I would maybe have to go back and look at my notes, but I remember seeing my students one day. Actually, I think, no. We had teach outs. It was Thursday and Friday, but I remember Friday, the class that I taught, they had an out-of-class work day, so, or something, so that I didn't technically teach that day. And then I think I saw them on Monday. Oh, we were supposed to have individual conferences that Friday, but I canceled. So my students, they write multiple drafts of papers, and so that was the day that I was supposed to have draft conferences with them, and I had some scheduled for the next Monday and Tuesday already. And so I remember what I did was, I didn't have time to grade during this first week. You know, I'm very proud that I did my job, and that a very important part of all of this protesting was continuing to do my job and maintaining good relationships with my department, and that meant doing my job. But that said, I did not have time to grade my students' drafts that first week. And so I had let them know that I needed to reschedule the conferences I would have had with them and other teaching assistants in my department. There's five of us that taught that class, met with their students off of campus that Friday. So we had teach outs Thursday the 17th and Friday the 18th. And then I remember we had a meeting at the concourse on Sunday. Saturday just all runs together. That might have been the day. I think that was the day of the Tea Party counter rally, which was very small. So that day there was a Tea Party counter rally. And then Sunday we had a meeting at the concourse. Monday we did not have a teach out. I remember being one of the people that was advocating for, like, I want to see my students. I feel like it's important to have class. It's important to be able to see our students face to face and explain what's going on. So we had class on Monday, And then we had our last teach out on that Tuesday. And I met with my students off of campus to finish their student conferences with their drafts. And the ones that I needed to meet off campus were all very accommodating. We just met at a coffee shop, the Espresso Royale right near campus. And so you asked me about whether or not there was time of rest, and I would say no, definitely not. And maybe that's by nature of what my role was. You know, doing media work continually needed to get done. So there were a group of, I want to say 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 of us that started and kind of stayed with it. And then as we continued with the website, Defend Wisconsin, we recruited. And so people were constantly coming into that room, 300 Northeast, wanting to help, especially as things got big. And as the story grew nationally, internationally, you know, it became the thing to do, right? That was this interesting kind of shift where you went from this small protest to a critical mass. And so rather than the norm being on the sideline, there was a moment in that period in February and March where the normal thing to do became to participate in the protest. And that was definitely a paradigm shift. The normal thing that myself and my friends did on a Saturday was we went to a demonstration. Like, I would say until mid-March, like, when spring break came around, the second half of March, and it felt weird not to go to a demonstration on a Saturday. It was like the thing that you did on a Saturday is you went and you demonstrated. It became the new normal for a period of time. So I would say I didn't really get very much rest until my body gave out on me and I physically got sick. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, it's me. I need to wrap this up for today, but I do. I mean, you have notes here. We're going to meet again. I think what I may try to do, too, is before we meet again, if you have time, I'll at least give you access to this recording, because it might not hurt to listen to it before we meet again, just in case there's things you need to clarify, and you can have your own words to sort of hear how that went. So is there anything, again, that's on your mind now that you might be fearful if we don't say now, we may not get on the record the next time?
I guess I'll just come back to briefly, I feel like it's really important that we were able, that we tried to strategize and actively frame ourselves and what we were doing, and articulate why we are here, why we were at the Capitol. And what it was about, that it was about democracy, and it was about workers' rights, and about what the deeper themes were. And particularly for us as graduate students, I think it was important, because we're in this situation where, you know, I think I might have mentioned this the last time, you know, we can be framed one of two major ways. You can frame somebody that's a graduate student as somebody who's never worked a day in their life, and they're just... your overprivileged kid, you know, in this extended adolescence. Or you can frame us as we're workers, and you know, we're living off of our salaries, and many of us have families, and we have financial obligations, and we're also students on top of that. So you can either kind of look at like lazy, not really working, or hardworking and industrious. You know, there's kind of these two main frames that can work with a graduate student. And so one of the things that we were up against with the Capitol occupation is wanting to frame ourselves as also as working people, but also as students. And you know, I think that there are statistics to back that up. For example, over 85% of discussion sections on campus are taught by teaching assistants. And you know, if you add in discussion sections, lectures, and labs, graduate assistants do almost half of the instruction on campus. So that's a huge amount of the teaching that's going on this campus is done by graduate student labor. But those are the kinds of things that are nuanced that we have to actively bring up. We have to actively present ourselves that way, particularly in a situation where we're occupying a state house. You know, the maybe more conservative media outlets can say, oh, they're just a bunch of kids that don't have anything better to do. But so we kind of run that risk, and that it was very important as an organization and for the movement to present a different side of why we were doing what we were doing.
Okay. Well, Jill, I want to thank you very much for your time today. Okay.